There we are, that's Gary Numan and Tube Way Army, and a song called Cars, which was number one back in about 1979-ish, and that was supposed to have played on Phil Jordan, who's was coming in to talk about the Islanders roads. One can only guess that he's stuck on them island roads, and maybe the longer that he's stuck on them, the more he might realise just how bad they are. I'm sure he does, and I'm sure there's a really good reason why he's not actually here. But Phil is not here at the moment. Hopefully, fingers crossed, he'll get here before the end. Otherwise, it's just me and you till 1 o'clock. And if ever you want to see a man that's really earning his money, then that'll be me for the next 50 minutes. Okay, filling a whole hour. Your mate Marco's just popped in, and Marco's ex-fireman. Morning or afternoon, Marco?
Good afternoon, sir, now, yeah.
You just looked at our clock. Is our clock now working?
Yes, the battery's in it. Yeah, someone's got to do it.
Okay, well that's what you do around here.
That's
you
what
do
I'm paid
all,
for, yeah.
You do all the old jobs.
Dog's yeah, body, yeah.
Paid,
anyway.
Paid in kind. And we've just heard some, well, I'd say it's sad news. I don't want to depress everybody. He's alive, and you know, Martin Poynter, a guy who I used to go to school with, and we're you know, because we're of the same age, we're all talking about our 50th birthdays this year, and we've just found out that Martin, well, we don't know the full details,
no,
but he's not well, and he is in hospital.
Yeah, that's the best way we have to leave it at the moment, but it doesn't sound too good at the moment. We're sort of hearing all different things, but we wish him well. But it's quite a shock, as we were saying earlier, you know, you're just coming up to 50, all you people. I mean, I've gone through that barrier, and I know a few people that have, you know, slipped away, but it's when you think, blimey, someone like Martin, it's a leveller.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
We wish him well, yeah, at the moment, and we'll report back with some details.
I mean, he's probably one of the most popular men around on the island. He's so
well known,
and he's got lovely character about him. So
he'll
yes,
about anyone.
We wish him. We wish him all
we
the best
do.
And all the, you know, all the luck in the world. And let's hope he's back on his feet before too long. But say he's been a fireman. How long? How long has he been a fireman?
Too long, mate. No, he's got 18 months to go. Until he retires then, because he's done 30 years then.
30 years, man and boy.
Man and boy, yeah.
Man and boy. How long are you in for?
26.
26 years?
Yeah, 26 years.
I mean, that is an incredible achievement.
It won't happen again because they're trying to change things, but that's all the different politics. But yeah, it's a long old slog. An enjoyable slog. Definitely enjoyable.
I would imagine it's got to be rewarding as well,
isn't
it?
It is. It's, I would say, because I'm biased, but I would imagine anyone in those sort of services, it is one of the best jobs. You see some terrible things, you see some good things, you can help people, and at the end of the day, you're fulfilled with the type of the job, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. I looked at some of your photos that you had on Facebook the other week.
Yeah.
And were you a fireman on the Isle of Wight and only the Isle of Wight?
The first photos you'll see, because people were saying, what the hell's this? That was at a training school in London in 79.
Right.
And we still had the old Victorian tunics when we joined.
Yeah.
And you had to clean all them buttons up and all that sort of thing. That's what that first picture is. And someone says you look like one of them Irish-American coppers from the 20s, you know, that's the sort of stuff. And then I eventually, you know, done different things, and I eventually moved down to the island when the kids was young. At 89, I transferred down, got the opportunity. And used to specialise in road traffic accidents in London, so I come down here and rode the emergency tender. And then, and things sort of opened up. And being the smallest brigade in Britain, you'd think, well, it'd be pretty quiet and all that. But there's so much other stuff going on. I mean, they're mad on the roads anyway. Talking about roads, that particular year, they said, well, it's pretty quiet for a road traffic accidents, mate. And we had 9 people die that year. And this bloke said, you're a junior. You better ship out back to London, mate. We don't know that. But that's when you're looking down the old sort of military road. And what it was people come over in a holiday and go, cool, that's a lovely bit of scenery. And a car coming the other way says, that's a lovely bit of scenery. And they don't see the car and they have their head-on collisions. And that was it, you know, and that's what happened. So it's a busy old brigade in some ways.
I can you know, vouch for certain people on the island. I mean, that was where we used to go. If you bought an old banger of a car, you used to go out the military road and see how high you could get it up to.
You'd open it up, I suppose, yeah.
Oh, I remember going along there and doing about 95 in an old Ford Escort Mark 3.
Yeah.
It was Mark 2, and it was, right old bone shaker.
Well, we used to have some cars years ago. My mate had a minivan, and he used to do little bits and pieces, and he used to put on the side TARDIS removal company. You know, how much you could get in the back of a minivan. Didn't used to make a lot of money. But the floor plate under the driver's seat was a welded tea tray. That's what someone had welded into it. So imagine going down a military road about 90 mile an hour and falling out. Unbelievable times. But Yeah, Small Brigade, and obviously it opened up and got involved taking trucks to Romania and all sorts, and you meet people from the media, and eventually I come out and that's how I met you.
Well,
so
that
it wouldn't have happened if I'd transferred from London, so...
Well, obviously you don't regret moving.
Never.
And you've been here for 26 years, I'm guessing.
26, no, what have you been talking, 89, what's that now? Yeah, 26 years, 27, you're pretty good at maths. I was never no good at maths. All right, smarty pants.
Oh, listener, if you could have seen him, his little face working it out there.
Yeah, no regrets, son. I go to London, there's still a buzz up there. My daughter works up there, but I've got to live up there. Drive me mad.
Well, I went up recently. I went up to see I went for a trip around the Emirates.
Oh, yeah.
And my son and I had a tour with Charlie George, and he took us around the Emirates. It absolutely blows your mind. I mean, you can see it on the TV and how wonderful it is, but when you actually get there and see the size of this blooming thing, and underneath the ground, you've got 700 parking spaces.
Right.
So, you know, you can actually turn up, park, 700 parking spaces underneath the ground. I mean, it's just phenomenal. And, of course, old Charlie George was a bit of a legend in his day, and he sounded just like you. And he was telling us the, you know, stories of when he was growing up and how he'd become an apprentice, and he was on £5 a week.
Oh yeah,
that's what he was on when he first started, a fiver a week. He sounded just like you, and apparently the original Arsenal were from South London, which is, that's where you're from, isn't it?
That was from Woolwich.
South London.
South London. It's S-A-R-F if you want to spell it. That's how you spell South. Yeah, from Woolwich Arsenal, just up the road. That's where they come from originally, wasn't it?
Just an incredible place, but you're right. I mean, you've got to be a different kind of animal to live in London.
Well, if you're born and bred there now, I would imagine you'll get used to it, but, you know, I'm not being that. It's horrible. I hate it. But it's got a great buzz to it. That's why my daughter, she likes working in a job. She's a paramedic. She works in Hackney in London, but she lives in Brentwood in Essex. And I said, why don't you sort of try and cut down on the commuting? Because that's the killer and all the money. She said, I couldn't live in Hackney, Dad. Although it's supposed to be up and coming with a few Hooray Henrys. Yeah. There's not a lot of Hooray Henrys at the moment. No. It's bad.
So, you know, there you are. You've been this fireman. Is that what they call them now?
Firefighters.
Firefighters.
I joined when I was a fireman, yeah, but it's changed to firefighters.
What did you do before that, then, before you became a fireman?
My very first job was a sign writer.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, apprentice sign writer, and I used to work for a company called Glover, Webb and Liversidge. You've probably never heard of it. It was by the gasworks by the Old Kent Road. And there was an old boy, that only lasted a week, not because of anything else. The old boy said, you don't want to come in here, Nipper. Well, he didn't say Nipper. It's Mush, then, but Nipper down there. You don't want to stay here, Nipper, he said, because there's going to be no money in it. Everything's going to be illuminated signs. There's no money in sign writing anymore. And I thought, well, that's handy, then. So I went and said to me, Dad, you know, what should we do? He said, well, get another job. Which you could them days, couldn't you?
Yeah, well,
this sign writing job, you used to paint in gold leaf. That's what I used to like, gold leaf. And you used to paint the Whitbread beer tankers. You remember them? Big brown tankers,
yeah,
Whitbread
yeah.
beer. And the gold lions on British Railway, on the carriages.
Wow.
That was the job. So I went from there, so I said to my dad, well, I've had enough. I'll get another job. So I said, go down to Labour Exchange. And I said, well, I'm not going down to Labour Exchange. I'm going to one of these agencies. And, you know, the old parents them days, watch it, boy, a bit iffy, them sort of places. So I went there. I said to someone, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I like painting and cartoons and all that. So do you want to work for an advertising agency? I said, well, I'll give that a go, yeah. So I started the next day on another quid. I think that was about £7 something. I said, well, I'm working over the West End in an advertising agency. Well, the look on his face was, yeah, you know this game, all this film malarkey and all that. I said, yeah. And I stayed there for, I suppose about 6 years, worked in a production department. Then I moved from there to a company called George Payne's. We make tea, and I used to make the George Payne's poppets, chocolates, in a posh cinema. And went from there to Customs and Excise, worked in Hayes Wolf. And there was an advert in the paper, and it said, join the fire service. And I looked at it, and I said to my wife, well, it's £5 more. So she said, well, we need the money. So that was it. Chucked me job in, joined the fire service. And I joined when I was about, it was about 25. So you ran around the yard with 18-year-olds. Boy. Anyway,
incredible.
Got there. And that's 22 weeks training. And I got allocated to Lewisham Fire Station. And it's 5 years until you qualify.
So you, obviously you've seen some changes over the, over the time.
Yeah. I mean, we'll look at the uniform photo to what they're wearing now.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that you know how true a reflection was the programme London's Burning, which of course was quite a long running series. Yeah. Was it one that you watch and think?
Yeah, I used to watch it quite regularly. The first two series, three series, were spot on.
Yeah,
really, for sort of the anarchy, the laugh.
Right.
Then they sort of like audio becomes more of a soap, doesn't it? And they stretch it out. It become better for effects.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, it was very good.
I must admit, I mean, I love the series, but I often wonder. I mean, I got an older brother in Sheffield, and he's a policeman, and he always used to tell me that he cringed whenever he watched The Bill, because it just wasn't real.
Yeah.
And very recently, I had a conversation with Jonathan Bacon, who's works in law. He was a barrister.
Barrister, yes, right.
And still is. Still is, or can be. He was saying that he can't watch things like Broadchurch. I don't know whether you've been watching Broadchurch. No. The whole series is based in the courtroom this time around. And the things that I'm watching, I'm thinking, well, I even pick up that there's certain things that you shouldn't be able to do and you wouldn't be allowed to do. And he just says, I can't watch it. So London's Burning you could watch because it was quite real.
Yeah, because I actually filmed it for the first two series at the actual fire station. It was at Dock Head, and they filmed in or around the proper crews, and the crews was like part of the extras. But then they got so popular they ended up building a studio separately, and that's where it sort of drifted away. But there was a woman there who used to produce that, and her name, believe it or not, was Fran Hollywood. How do you have a name like that?
Fran Hollywood. Brilliant.
And we got involved from Lewisham. They wanted some extras. Do you remember the guy in there was called Vaseline? Right at the beginning, and he died. He was doing a bit of gardening on the side and all that, wasn't he? And he ended up getting burnt in it, supposedly. And they wanted a cemetery scene, and we went to that.
Oh, right.
We're actually in that bit, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's a back view. Got paid for it as well.
Do you know, out of all the ITV dramas from years gone by, that's one that I would really love to see again from the beginning, because I didn't actually see the first couple of series. I only caught it on when there was Poison Pierce. He was in it as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, introduced that character.
And there was people like Bailiff, obviously, and others too. But I really liked what I saw after that, and then they knocked it on the head.
Yeah, and then they try to bring it back and it sort of lost its way. But at the day, if you have a look at the early, if you can, even on YouTube, I think there's a bit, the very early ones, you'll see that's a uniform that I was in.
Yeah.
It was right heavy, and when it got wet, it was like wearing a wet blanket.
Right.
And then you go to work, and then you'd have to put it in a drying room, because then you dry it out, and all those buttons are chrome, so then they go naturally, go duff colour, and then the governor, like the station officer, the next day, say, you better clean your buttons up, boy. And you got all this Dura glit, remember that sort of stuff? And
clean
it all up. But it was all part of the old, because it's all loosely termed on Navy lines.
Right.
It's not so much now, but, you know, they used to take, you could join the fire service up to 31, but they'd take Navy boys up to 33, because they was physically fit.
Crikey.
But I don't think it's Navy sort of thing now, because you'd have things like six bells, four bells, one bells, all things that meant, you know, four bells means, right, it's dinner time, six bells is an emergency, one bell, the big governor's arrived, the divisional officer.
Oh, right.
You know,
excellent.
All that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So there was one scene that I remember in the program, and before I want to talk about the other stuff and bring it right up to date and what your thoughts are now. But there was one bit in it where the guy had a beard. Mm-hmm. He had like a goatee beard. I can't remember the guy what his name was in the program, but he refused to shave it off. And it was all about new masks and stuff.
That's
and
right,
that, and they said it had to go.
Wasn't his name Recall or something like
it
that?
It was Recall. Yeah,
he was a fella that had a great memory, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that I can relate to that over here. See, they look around for the fire service, what's controversial. And at the time, it might have been related to that, we had two guys that was in freshwater that had beards. And they changed the style of the breathing apparatus mask. And now you can't have any facial hair. And so they used to shave it right down to one of these little goatee ones, so it just about hold on. And over here, they had a bit of a set too. And these two guys says, oh, we want to keep them on the run, which, you know, keep them.
Sure.
On fire engines, and under health and safety, and people go, well, here we go, but they couldn't wear them because they'd get an air leak and it lets in gas, they'd suffocate, or they'd put their own crewmates in danger. And it was a right old hoo-ha, and I wonder if they did get that sort of story and turn it into a story.
Do you think that, you know, because let's be honest, if you had a goatee beard and you were quite attached to it, obviously, would you have made such a fuss, though? Because, you know, well, health and safety about, you know, there's a reason for it.
There's rules and regs. Forget health and safety. The bottom line is you sign a contract, there's rules and regs. If the rules and regs change, they always say there's the door if you don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. You know, it's quite harsh, a bit like the Navy. Well, no one asks you to join, ship out. So, yeah, without being too controversial, there was a lot more involved, but it went on for ages. But, yeah, very good series. See if we can track it down.
Well, do you know what? I'd love the complete series from the beginning, because I could watch it all the way through. It used to be on Sunday nights, and when it first started, you always knew when it started after summer, and you knew that summer was over then, because it was like October, sort of September, October time.
Yeah, it's your run through to Christmas time, didn't it?
It was. Now, you're actually standing in for the public protection guy and PFI executive member, Phil Jordan. Mm. Phil Jordan's not made it to the studio. I've just checked my emails and double-checked again, and we did say, you know, 12 o'clock on the 18th of February 2015, and sadly he's not here, but hopefully, fingers crossed, he will be at some point, and there's a valid reason why he's not. I hope he's okay. You're doing a sterling job. Fire Brigade on the island has obviously changed over the years, isn't it?
It certainly is, and
I know that you were very vocal, and others too, and I was as well, when they said, right, we're going to ship it off to, where did they ship? Surrey, wasn't it?
The fire control's gone to Surrey at the moment, yeah.
Has it made a massive amount of difference?
No. They're supposed to save £300,000.
Right.
They made 12 people redundant, shifted it to Surrey. You've got to ask, where's the £300,000 gone? What's that used on? And are they still paying money to Surrey now? Yes, they are. I don't know the exact figures, but I spoke to someone today. It's still costing money. It's up for grabs again in 2 years' time. Whether the council are going to try and get it back, I doubt it. The rumour has is Hampshire's then going to take it over, like they're taking over the fire service now.
Okay.
The three positions at the top have now gone, haven't they? Chief, deputy and third officer have now gone. We're working in partnership, but I believe the islanders have still got to pay Hampshire quite a few million pounds for Hampshire to run us.
It'll be interesting if we ask the question if he arrives. If not, we'll ask him some other time. But I think it's a question that needs answering. But has it made a difference out there, safety-wise? Does it hamper?
I can't comment now because I've left it. But the people that's in it who can't say the right things or the wrong things, because there is pressure on them, that, you know, if you say the wrong things, you'll get done. They're saying, allegedly, we'd say, there has been some misrouted calls that have taken time and time to find the place. People still believe in localism and local knowledge, and you can have the best technology in the world. And I'll give you an example of speaking to this person today. Essex, only 2 months ago, I've gone across to a brand new tipping out system, which is terminology for turnouts and things from the general public. It's collapsing so many times, they've gone back to taking calls with pen and paper. So it's not all the be-all and end-all, some of these sort of mergers and big regional controls. You can or still do need a local control. But we've lost ours now, that's gone. The best thing, the genie's out of the bottles, we can open ours, put the rein on the genie.
What does that mean?
Well, the way it used to work...
Are you talking South London again?
No. The way things used to work quite good. You know, we've all got to change and look forward, I know. The way things used to work, the terminology, if you let the genie out of the bottle, so it's working nicely, but you take the champagne cork out... Everything comes out, good bits, nasty bits.
Yeah.
The genie's out of the bottle now. Everyone's saying, oh, we can have all regional controls. We don't need all these brigades. We can push them all together and amalgamate. You know everything based on what you know on the island. Anything that's made bigger to save money, eventually it collapses, doesn't it? I don't think there's anything that's worked. And, you know, I've been going on my eye also. Anything that's gone from public to private sector as well doesn't appear to work. And they're trying it. I mean... Mr. Blondie in Boris in London, he's considering privatising the City of London side of the fire service to a Danish company. He reckons he can save £80 million. Well, that's what they've done in the Victorian times. And eventually, it'd probably go full circle and you turn up to a fire and they say, what insurance plaque have you got on the wall? Oh, no, I haven't got that one. They'll have to burn then. It's as if you've got to reinvent the wheel to someone to come back and say, do you know what? I think we could have a nice little control with our own little brigade. It's ours.
Hmm.
But we're a long way from that.
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? And let's be honest.
It costs a lot of money. But the emergency service costs a lot of money, don't they?
You're breaking the place now, waving your arms about.
It just costs a lot of money.
I can see the logic in it. And again, I still... I still don't understand why we lost it. We are a unique island, and you know, in the past, and I don't know how, and maybe Phil could have answered this. You know, his role for public protection when it comes down to things like, I mean, people are talking about terrorist attacks now.
Oh.
I mean, how wide open is the Isle of Wight for terrorist attacks? And you know, in the past, we've had things that have washed up on beaches that may be explosive,
yeah.
And you hear the stories that, oh, the bomb disposal squad, they're on their way, they're coming from the mainland, and you think, right, 2-3 hours later then they're going to arrive, what happens in the meantime?
Yeah.
And it is a bit of a worry, and we are a bit of a special case. So one of my questions would have been, I'm not just about roads, but are we set up to be protected from you know, all sorts of things that could happen, you know, you know, bombs washing up on the beach? It, well, does happen.
He would probably tell you, yes, we are, because he's told that from the chiefs. Yes, we are. And as far as I know, they are trained to do some things, but it's the technology involved. You're just saying a bomb disposal comes over on a ferry. The technology's there. If they knock the ferry out with technology, they ain't coming over, are they?
Well, that's... you see,
so, you know, and when you've got no chance, when you've got MPs that don't even realise that the Isle of Wight, the clue's in the title there, Isle... is not part, that they think it's part of the mainland.
Yeah.
They won't even get island recognition. So you've got no chance at all.
Well, I remember seeing a car accident on the Chessel Road, the main road through to, what would you call it now?
Middle Road.
The Middle Road. And I remember that there was a car accident. I had a mobile phone on me, made a phone call, phoned 999, explained to them exactly where it was, and they ended up going somewhere along Forest Road.
Yeah.
And this was back in about 1996, 97 time. So, and it was just at the time when they moved the some phone system to the mainland. Was it Tetley? I used to call them the Tetley Tea Folk. But what were they called?
Netley. The police went there,
And so, you know, you can't beat local knowledge.
You can't. No.
And you really can't. And I say, I don't know how we've managed to, I think by more luck than judgment, actually, over the last few years. Without you know, coming down too hard on people, because I think, you know, the guys that are sat, that they do a terrific job, but they're hampered.
Mm.
They're hampered with these things. So, you know, I've never been able to understand why we've shipped this off to the mainland. I mean, you know, that to me is, we're a special case. We are unique, and you know, it just goes to show. They've just made announcements today that unemployment figures are they're up on the island. More and more people are they're lower than they were last year, but apparently they've risen in the last couple of months. And obviously, with the ice rink closing and problems at Gurrit, those numbers are going to go up yet again. But they say the unemployment figures are still the lowest or the highest. Sorry, they're worst. In the southeast, the worst in the southeast. So you know, we are, unfortunately, we've got some wonderful things to offer, great scenery. We're a great destination for holidays and so on. We shouldn't be negative about everything, but there are one or two things that are kind of negative, and that's because people aren't recognising the fact that we are special and unique, and we do need some help.
And the reality is, no matter, all these companies say they'd like to invest in the island, it's a wonderful place. People say, well, you can't get many cheaper than the Isle of Wight for wages, and you probably can't. But if you look at the news now, what Gurrit's suggesting is they're going to Hungary. Reason being, cheaper than the Isle of Wight. They're not really, allegedly, bothered about where they work. It's all about money, isn't it?
Well,
and it's all about... And so you get people saying we need to save here and be more resilient. That seems to be the word, resilience, and trimming this and trimming that. The bottom line is, people need work. They need a decent wage, and then it might move forward. They're not getting decent wages, so they're unemployed. And then you get so many people retire over here, don't you? And the unemployment for youngsters is either work in old care homes or they have to leave. And it's a great place to live. So everyone with money comes to the Isle of Wight. There's no jobs, so the young people that got to look after them have to ship out. That's the way the maths work. So we'd just be an old duffer's place, wouldn't we?
Well, we are, and we have been, sadly, for a long time. And, you know, I think, you know, the Isle of Wight has many, many problems. It has many, many wonderful things to offer as well. This nation of ours has, you know, the same kind of issues. I think that the things that we've got in place, they don't work now because things have changed.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the NHS system. Whatever they've got in place, it's a wonderful thing, but it doesn't work because there's more people using it. And there's more people using it, both ends of the scale. You've got youngsters, you've got people in between, and you've got more old people than ever before because people are living longer. Mm. The pension situation, which I'm going to try and steer you into, because I know that's one of the issues around at the moment surrounding the fire. And you might say, I don't want to talk about it. But again, you've got people that... I mean, I'm just going back to my own... When I was a child, growing up, you get to 15, 16, you get your first job, and then you get Mr. Insurance Man comes round, wants to sell you a policy, wants to sell you a pension, and you say, yeah, I'll have that. So when you're 65, that's it. And then they say, oh, you can't retire at 65. So then, you know, and there's not enough money in the pot because we're living longer, aren't we? Because let's be honest, when I took that out, if I got to 65, I was thinking I was incredibly lucky. And if I got to 70, that's, you know, that's the icing on the cake.
But there nowadays, was money in the pot, Ian. See, they've had the money. They've invested it. And they invested it in the good times and the bad times. They've used your money.
Yeah.
But now they haven't got any money. So now they say, well, we haven't got enough money because you're living too long. It's nothing to do with it. They've squandered the money. The money that was invested for our pension scheme in the fire service went into artwork and gold and all buildings and all that. Well, all of a sudden there's no money. Well, it's there. And the government find money when they want it. A mate of mine, funny enough, put on Facebook yesterday, quite controversial because he's not an eco-friendly giant, he just said, ring fence the NHS with real money. All the money that we send, he said, don't worry about a trout swimming up the wrong way in the Amazon. He said, eat the trout. He said, forget all that malarkey. Spend the money on the NHS. Ring fence it. And so what he's getting at is there's loads of money when they want to find it.
Yeah.
But now it's, we're all living too long. Well, that's a shame. I remember when my dad was still at work, they were saying, well, hopefully you can live a little bit longer, the way we're living and the way we're eating. Well, they were still paying all these pension in.
Mm.
And also, you got me on one now, pensions.
Forward.
I know people that have paid in all their life to the pension scheme, my father-in-law being one, dropped dead at 64. Where's his money then? Where's that gone? There's loads of people that's not made 65, but the government's had all the money.
Do you know what? You're absolutely right, because my stepdad died aged 64 as well, and he paid in for a wonderful pension. I think he was in the army. Yeah. He worked all his life, paid in for something, Bosch. Didn't even get to pensionable age, and that was it. Gone.
Again, gone. And they've squandered the money, haven't they? That's what it is, and we know they've squandered the money. Don't blame it on people just living too long, and don't blame it on, well, you know, you've lost your pension. The private sector's lost their pension. Yeah, but the private sector was paid probably more and paid into non-contributory pension schemes. The fire service paying into a contributory pension scheme. Most of the lads are paying between £250 and £400 a month. That's a lot of dosh into their scheme. So when it comes to retiring at 55, or what this idiot now in government said is 60, although that could be challenged, they want their money. Nothing wrong with that, is there?
So where does a guy like you, just started your 60s, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you know, living. Let's first of all look at the local aspect, the local issue. You've got six people that are going to stand. I mean, I'm going to ask you the question. I mean, do you know who you're going to vote for when it comes down to it?
Not a chance.
You don't. You have
probably
no
not
idea
until the morning. No. At this moment, he's probably leaning towards the Greens or possibly Independent.
Right.
But none of the other Herberts. Because they're all singing the same sort of thing. You've got the Tories sort of saying, yeah, well, we're still going to have some more cuts. You've got Labour saying, yeah, we're going to have to continue with those cuts. You've got Lib Dem saying, well, be another 2 years of them cuts and then we're clear of it. And then when you speak to all three of them, say, so when it's all over, are you going to give us them services back that everyone's doing voluntary? Well, no. Well, I'm not interested then. So you can't carry on with voluntary forever, can you?
No.
So at the moment, it's pointing to Lib, Independent or Greens.
Okay, which is interesting, because as I say, we asked the question a little while ago, many people, and I think, you know, there's still a lot of people out there that are undecided,
yeah,
because there's not a lot of choice, is there?
There's no spark, they could lie, couldn't they? Let's just say, I mean, Ed Miliband, for example, I know they keep saying he's something like out of Wallace and Gromit, but if he was to say, this is what we're going to do, I'm going to ring-fence the NHS, I'm not going to send a load of money for a couple of years, because of the austerity, in foreign aid. Right, I'm going to look at the immigration side. We're going to try to create loads of jobs. You get my vote, even if you don't mean it. But to say the same thing as, well, we're going to do that the same as the Tories, well, I'm sorry, mate, ship out. There's no hope. Certainly there's no hope for young people.
Do you know what? You just said something there that's really, really interesting, and I was thinking exactly the same thing a little while ago, because it's no secret, my wife works at the council, and she came home the other week, and she said there's going to be some more cuts. and she said there's X amount of jobs that have got to go. This is now public knowledge. Everyone knows this. There are some jobs that are going to go. She said something then. I said, so when it comes down to it, when you go to vote in a minute, if I was in your shoes, I'd be looking at the people that are not going to do so many cuts, because that's what it's all about. Mm. The reason why you may lose your job or your colleagues may lose their job is because of the cutbacks. Okay, and then they made somebody made a statement. This was going back a further month before then. Whatever they do, it won't have, whoever gets in power, it won't have any effect on redundancies. Okay, now I look at that and I think, well, hang on, it should, of course it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that they can't be political. So, but because the common sense thing would have been, and I'm guessing we'll all work it out in the end, hey, if you vote for this lot, they're going to do some cutbacks, they're going to carry on with the cutbacks, and if you stick with this person here, their cuts are not going to be as deeper as those. So if you work in, for the local councils up and down the country, you might just keep hold of your job. Mm. Who are you going to vote for? Well, you're going to vote for that one, aren't you?
Yep.
Every time. But the words that came out was, it don't matter who you vote for, by the way. So I'm guessing that's their way of being neutral when, we all know, just say, for instance, and you're absolutely right, if somebody was to say, and this is what I grew up being a Labour voter. I haven't voted Labour for the last two elections, purely and simply because the reason why I voted Labour was because I thought I was working class. And, that's what I thought Labour looked after, working class people. My mum has always voted Labour, but, I think even in her eyes now, she's looking at it and thinking they are a little bit sort of watered down Tories, is the terminology that she may use. And it's almost like they're almost offering the same in that respect.
Yeah.
There's going to be cutbacks no matter what. Well, okay, the same cutbacks. So you're right, they're offering the same. I find that ridiculous, and it's not going to be a ratings winner. So, you've got what are the choices? At the end of the day, what are the choices?
Well, that's what I've always said. I mean, they're saying at the moment the Tories, it'll be, if they don't get in, the books will be open, and they reckon they've borrowed more than the Labour did the last time. And they was all gloating and said, oh, look how much you borrowed. Well, if they're right, then the Tories have got it wrong, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've had a chance with a coalition the first time for umpteen years. People thought, maybe there's a chance. There's a bit of chance for a fresh bit of breath here. We might be able to get... It's not worked. Then you've got Clegg saying there's another 2 years of it, but then you won't be able to get the stuff back. And we all know that over 500,000 public employees have lost their jobs to try to balance these books. They've not got rid of it. It's the public... They say, oh, we'll cut them. So all those poor people, nearly swore there, those poor people have lost their jobs, who are now unfortunately on the dole, costing a fortune to society. They're not going to get any jobs back, but it hasn't balanced the books. So whether you believe it or not, it hasn't balanced the books. It's only done a little bit of it. So they can't cut the public service anymore, otherwise we won't need local government. You won't need them, will you? You might as well have a voluntary council, like we're all doing voluntary libraries. There's no need. There's no one to govern. So, well, how much more can they cut?
At some point, our councils up and down the country are not going to provide the service that they're supposed to do.
No.
And then what happens?
Well, I'd suggest to the people here, I'm thinking about it, they've got the audacity to raise the council tax or rates, whatever you want to call it, by 1.9, not 2%. So they haven't got to have a referendum on that. It's about the second year they've done it. They've got the audacity to do that, but we're getting less services. I'd say to people over here, don't pay it. Let them take it on. Do not pay it. If you're having less service for more money, exit stays left.
Well, see, I can see what you're saying, and I kind of then think back a couple of weeks when it was all announced that HMRC, the banks, are giving people advice on how not to pay tax. Mm. What's the difference? What is the difference? You're giving someone advice. Okay, they may not be able to track you down and pull you in and say you got to pay.
But that what you're getting at there is, that sounds like they're deliberately trying to avoid tax, supposedly. All I'm saying is, a protest, you cannot keep assuming people's going to volunteer for this and volunteer for that. Increase the local tax for a less service. At least don't increase it. I mean, it's like me saying to you, I'll tell you what, sell your motorbike, give us 50 quid, but you still walk. What have I gained out of it? Nothing, mate. It's nonsense. So that's my... That gets me putting the taxes up. The voluntary bit really gets me. You're all helping out, but if they're not going to replace these services like toilets, libraries and whatever,
yeah.
Well, what's the point of volunteering? You can't get enough bus drivers now on the voluntary routes because, hello, the bulb's gone off. Wait a minute, I'm driving along using my licence, could get done for speeding, doing it for nothing. Ah, right. They've got to spend the money. They've got to raise the taxes from somewhere else. The way out, as we said before, one of your local councillors said, there's no money. Spend that emergency fund. It's emergency time. Spend it. And also have the courage to say to the government, we're not cutting. You get my vote if you say you're not cutting.
Well, that's an interesting one as well. I like the sound of that.
Just
too.
Be brave. No, I'm not going to cut.
Well, you know, I say.
What are they going to do? Send someone over? Send them over. Let Dave come over. You got me wound up now.
You're starting a riot. You're only going to stay 20 minutes, weren't you?
Look at the time.
Look what we got out of you. But it's interesting. It's interesting from...
It's frustrating. And that's from a 60-odd-year-old. For a young person, it must be a nightmare. What is the point, they're thinking?
Yeah,
where do we go? What do we do? No one's listening.
As a point of, you know, I wouldn't get 50 quid for my little bike.
So, 49 then. Job done.
I don't think I'd even get 49 either, to be honest. Are you going now?
I'll wait for the last 5 minutes then.
You're going to carry on, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you mind if we take a quick commercial break and then
commercial break
and then we'll come back with more.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Want to look and feel fantastic for that party or special occasion? Make sure you talk to the girls at Beautify and let Yolanda and her team of experienced therapists work their magic. Beautify offer a wide range of treatments from massages, eyebrow threading, lash extensions, gel nails, manicure and pedicure, spray tans and lots more, including permanent cosmetics and teeth whitening. Call Beautify today on 5335 54 or find them at 1 Chain Lane in Newport. Just look for the purple butterfly. Booking is essential. Quote Vectus Radio and you will get £10 off all treatments.
Business Insight, a weekly programme of interviews and insights from some of the island's most respected business leaders on what drives their success. Plus business news and information to help your business succeed in today's fast-paced and competitive business world. Mondays at 6:20 p.m. on The Evening Event with Darren Fernando. Also available for download and podcast online at vectisradio.com. Business Insight is brought to you by Jigsaw Sales and Marketing Consultants, driving business success.
White Trash. 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 Trash.
White Trash World, the home of the island's very own skate brand, White Trash. 59 High Street Ride. It's open Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays, 10:30 till 6 p.m. Not just about skateboards, it's clothing, gifts, shoes, books, DVDs and more. The island's only skate store, White Trash World. Ride High Street.
Are you wondering what to get people for a present this year? Why not have a family portrait? Ticks all the boxes and it's totally unique. You need Holly Cade Photography. Holly Cade Photography is not just for birthday and Christmas presents. It can be for weddings, parties and much more. Individual jobs can be tailor-made to suit your needs, along with reasonable prices. For more details, contact Holly Cade at hotmail.co.uk or visit hollycade.co.uk.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre. Our packages are great value and we constantly check our prices to ensure we remain competitive against other providers. Call for a chat on 01983 240 240.
Now, unfortunately, my guest for the day, Phil Jordan, Councillor Phil Jordan, is not in. For some reason, he hasn't been able to make it into the studio. We have left a message on our answer phone and sent him a text, but nothing back. And we're hoping everything is okay, but we will reconvene. So my friend and colleague is Marco Newlands, ex-fireman. He's got some wonderful stories he's just shared. And he's decided to sort of, step in and help me out. And also... So on the other end of this telephone should be Pete Harris. How are you, Pete?
Good afternoon, chaps. It's very, very interesting listening to your discussion. And it's very rewarding listening to it, because there's so many of us ordinary people, we think the same, don't we? And I go along with everything that Marco's been saying there. I was listening to on the subject of all this money disappearing into a great big abyss. It would be lovely to sort of try and suss out where it actually goes. And I was thinking this as you were having your discussion. And you know, there's a procedure they do in hospitals whereby you have something called, I think it's called a barium mill. When you take this fluid, and it's like it glows or something, it's like nuclear inside you, and then they take a series of x-rays to figure out where the, you know, where it's going in your body and what's happening. I'm not entirely sure why they do it, but it's an interesting sort of little thing. And I wonder how interesting it would be to apply such a concept to our cash flow in this country, our money, because all this money we're paying into this abyss that has been run up for us by the casino bankers and our politicians, who say, you know, you've got to just sort of accept us trashing all of your public services, etc., and all the money the country's making is going to pay this debt. Actually, where does this money end up? Where is the end place? Wouldn't it be lovely to put some sort of trace on the money and find out where it actually ends up? Because do you know?
I've got no idea, and I'm judging by Marco's face, he's got no idea either. No.
Well, there are all these supposedly fabulously sort of godlike financiers, or there is a destination, surely, where all our money goes, because they're not spending it on keeping the toilets open, they're not spending it on employing police officers, or sufficient teachers, or nurses, or firefighters. But we're making all this money. We're taxed like no other nation on earth. All that money goes somewhere. Where? Where does it actually go? Wouldn't that be an interesting question to get to the bottom of? Where is this ultimate destination for all our money? Because I want to know where it is.
Do you know what? I don't think you're supposed to know. That's the whole trick, isn't it? That's the whole point. I don't think we're us people at the bottom here. I don't think we're supposed to know. We shouldn't get too clever and find out where all that money comes from. We can assume, we can guess, because let's be honest. I mean, you walk around, even on the Isle of Wight, even though they say there's X amount more people that's unemployed, you're still seeing an awful lot of people in brand new cars. You're still seeing people opening up businesses and being incredibly wealthy and going on holiday and so on and so forth. You're still seeing that.
You do.
And ask yourself this. I put a message on your Facebook page the other day, the question was quite simple. You know, are we better off now? Are we better off now than we were?
That's for sure.
Yeah, but I bet you've got a better lifestyle now.
No, I haven't.
Haven't you?
I've worked my arse off. I work harder now than I've ever worked in my life. And I'm sort of at the age where I would really like to be slowing down, but in actual fact, I'm having to work harder and harder all the time. And it's just not funny. As for the prospect of being able to retire, I don't have one. My prospect is just continue working. Because, the little private pension I've got is not worth the paper it's written on.
Right.
And then we're, do you mind if I mention Radio 4? Is that okay, Ian?
I'm not protective or,
I was listening to Woman's Hour this morning.
Oh, why would you? Woman's Hour?
On Radio 4. It's a fascinating programme. Everything I know about women I've learned from that programme, I tell you.
Are you married? Are you in a relationship?
Well, sort of.
It's not working then.
No, but my point is they're having a discussion all this week about something that has become very close to my own heart in recent months, and that is care of the elderly and because of what's going on with my mum with being diagnosed with dementia and all the rest of it. They were discussing how people are coping with the price of care when they get to the point where they can't cope on their own anymore. And we're talking about sort of £600, £700, £800, £900, even £1,000 a week to look after somebody in one of these homes. And, that's the price of care. Now, the thing is, the people who do the donkey work in these places, they are all probably on the minimum wage or not much better. The people who actually do the bottom wiping, etc., the real workers, they're all on pathetic money, minimum wage, whilst the people who are in charge of these corporate outfits running this place are minted. They're all that money is going into corporate coffers. And one of the spokesmen on this show said, well, you know, when they were talking about how on earth do you pay for all this, where did an ordinary family come up with £800 a week to keep an old person in care? And the answer was, and it's put forward quite seriously, is, well, don't expect to inherit your mum or your dad's house. Sell the house, use all that money to pay for the care the old person needs, which ultimately means that all that money that they work for all their life doesn't go down to the next generation as was their intention as should happen, but instead all that work that they've done for their 40 or 50 years at the workplace, that's all going to end up in the corporate coffers of some care home corporation. But that just isn't working, is it? This is not working for our country.
Do you know what? Going back to your original question, you've just answered the question, haven't you?
This is another source by which all our money is disappearing into financiers' pockets, like the PFI system. They put Portsmouth NHS Trust was put into a PFI, wasn't it? Well, that means all the taxpayers' money that goes into the running of that trust ultimately ends up with the pockets of these financiers again. There must be some little guy sat in a boardroom somewhere with so much money, it's not true.
And it's not you, and it's not me, and it's not Marco.
No, because we're the guys, we've got to work all our lives until we fall off the perch, you know, just paying all our money into this this pot, wherever it is. I'd so love to know where the pot is.
Well, follow the pot. I think you've answered it, though. That's where
well, no,
it is.
I haven't, because I don't know where it is. Well, if I did know where it is, I think we should go and raid it and get our money back.
Can I give you a various anomaly on that then, Peter? A friend of mine, he lives in Kent. He's and his mum has just passed away, but she suffered from Alzheimer's in the end. But his dad used to work for Lloyds. And he used to sort of look after the family. They never go on holiday. The dad didn't, but he put them on holiday. Yeah. He provided for all the family, and then he eventually dies. So mum inherits, you know, gets the house and the money. And eventually she catches the old bad disease, Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead of lasting for about 3 or 4 years, she lasted for 15 years.
Ooh, yeah.
So what it is, the anomaly is the next door neighbour rented the place. That was her choice. That was a family choice. They rented. His family decided they'd buy. So, okay. So, at the end... The mother then goes into a care home,
yeah,
and all the house money was sold, and they lost every single penny.
Yep.
She then remained in that home, but the woman who was in the rented accommodation had the same home.
Yeah.
Now, that can't
paid
be right.
By the council. Yeah.
It can't be right. So, that's what they want. They want to drain the people with the money that might have just moved up a little bit in the class world with a house. They've paid all their taxes, but the family next door elected to rent, and that's no problem with renting either. She got the same treatment. Can't be right.
Yeah.
And also, my mate has got not a penny that his dad provided for. It's all gone.
Yeah, and that his dad laboured under the impression all his life that he was working as hard as he was, not having holidays, etc., so that his sons and daughters, whatever, might actually inherit something from him.
And might actually better their life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And also, another little aspect to this is the fact that we all know what casino bankers have done to this country. These are the same people in control of these financial institutions that are absorbing all our money, making us all work till we drop, paying all our money into their coffers rather than saving for our own pensions and having a decent lifestyle ourselves. They're the same people who screwed the country up.
Well, we've got one.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. Well, we've got one thing to look forward to. I've seen
that
in a paper yesterday. In about 4 years' time, apparently George Osborne's father's not very well at the moment, and he, because it's hereditary, he will become Sir George Osborne.
and he'll inherit all the wallpaper company and all the millions that go with that. So, right, you know, that's a good prospect. So old Georgie will be looked after, and of course he'll have a nice title in about 4 years.
Carl, you've cheered me up, you two, haven't you?
Well, there you go. Yeah, things to look forward to, part two.
Well, it does sort of really rub in, though, doesn't it? Everything we've been saying here, that these politicians, these senior Tories, Liberal and Labour politicians, they are all running a system to benefit people like George Osborne, you know, the bankers, the financiers. The entire system is to run to benefit them, not to benefit us.
Well, it does appear
we're
that
the peasant.
It appears that way. I don't know if
we
you see
for nothing.
Did you see the programme on the telly last night? It's three out of four. It's about the Commons. Check it out
I
next Tuesday.
No.
Hey, 9 o'clock next Tuesday is brilliant, the last one.
We've got to go, but thank you, Peasant
Pete.
Nice
day. Very interesting discussion. Good to listen to.
Thank
Cheers,
you.
Mate.
Cheers. Better than Radio 4. Hi. Thank you, Marco. It's one of